Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is WNYC FM HD and AM New York, WNJT FM 88.1 Trenton, WNJP 88.5 Sussex, WNJY 89.3 Netcong, and WNJO 90.3 Toms River. It's New York and New Jersey Public Radio. I'm Brian Lehrer, and if you've been hearing a lot of buzz, more than usual, about Elizabeth Warren this week, our next guest may be to blame. New Republic senior editor Noam Scheiber profiled the Massachusetts Democratic senator this week and previewed a possible Hillary Clinton-Elizabeth Warren showdown in 2016. But his piece was not as much about 2016 speculation as about what Warren may now represent, what he sees as an emerging divide within the Democratic Party, and some surprising statistics about what young Democrats want. It's not just the GOP that may be on the verge of an intra-party fight. So Noam Scheiber, welcome back to WNYC. Hi.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So let's get right to what caught our eye in your piece.
Sure.
Some of these stats about the state of the Democratic Party. You say the main trend is that Democrats are hostile towards Wall Street and want government to rein it in, and young Democrats in particular are hostile toward capitalism.
Yeah, actually, this is a Pew poll that came out recently, and I have to give credit to a former colleague of mine at the New Republic, Peter Beinart, who first cited this. But if you ask Democrats, young Democrats, how they feel about capitalism and how they feel about socialism, they actually have more favorable views towards socialism. This is Democrats under 30. More favorable views towards socialism, towards capitalism. About 49% have favorable views of socialism, about 47% toward capitalism.
Is that shocking to you?
You know, I think the headline is kind of shocking, but if you think about what's gone on since they've been in the workforce, it's not so shocking, right? These are people who went into debt to pay for college educations, and ever since they got out, the labor market has been absolutely abysmal. So you can't blame them for thinking that something in the system is not working.
Although we should probably assume that most Americans probably have a pretty inaccurate definition of both socialism and capitalism.
I think that's probably safe. Yes, I think that's probably safe to say.
But they mean something by it. Maybe they just mean things like Obamacare. Which, by the way, again, listeners, if you're just tuning in, President Obama is expected to announce this hour, and we do intend to carry it live, that insurance companies will be able to extend the so-called substandard plans that didn't meet the new requirements for benefits coverage set in the Obamacare law. So this is going to be an attempt to make good on his promise that if you like your old insurance, you can keep it. Noam, do you want to comment on that at all? I know this is just breaking and we don't have all the details.
Sure, yeah. I mean, I think the details are really key here because if you do that kind of 100%, it starts to undermine some of the economics of the Affordable Care Act. So I think there are probably some practical limits that they're going to place on that. If they have too many people staying in those old plans, they're not going to get the enrollment they need in the new plans. The new plans are going to be very expensive, and you'll get this sort of death spiral that, you know, a lot of healthcare economists have been talking about. But I do suspect that they're going to probably have some kind of grace period, some kind of relaxation of the rules, just to, you know, ease the strain in the kind of transition.
And we are told that insurance companies will be required to notify policyholders of their alternative plans available under Obamacare. And reports are coming in that this is a change that can be implemented at the executive level. And that's really interesting because it means the president would not have to go through Congress and have it voted on by the Republican House. So we're not sure about exactly how that would work, but we'll wait to hear that from the president. And one thing, Noam, that I'll be curious to hear is about whether insurance companies will not just be allowed, which is the word I've seen, required to go back to those plans that they've been eliminating over the last months and maybe year or two in anticipation of Obamacare to try to get people into these maybe more expensive, more comprehensive plans.
I think that is the key distinction. I think they are going to go with allowed. I think that's what they can do at the executive level. And I think, frankly, if they required it, then it would start this unraveling that I alluded to earlier. So I think they want to just give them a little more wiggle room, tamp down some of the political backlash, but not do a sort of wholesale rethinking of the Affordable Care Act.
Noam Scheiber from The New Republic. And let's get back to your article on the possible coming divide in the Democratic Party. To go back to some of those stats, in the Pew survey, 92% of Democrats agree with the statement, it's really true that the rich get richer while the poor get poorer. That's almost 10 points higher than the number who said that in 2009. Back in 2007, even a majority of Democrats said that government regulation of business does more harm than good. A majority of Democrats no longer says that. On the statement, corporations generally strike a fair balance between making profits and serving the public interest. Back in 1997, 43% of Democrats agreed with that statement. Today, it's just 29%. So does this all signal a potential rift coming in the Democratic Party? That seems to be what your article suggests.
Yeah, exactly right. I think if you look at rank-and-file Democrats and these numbers sort of attest to it, you've really seen this movement in the last 5 to 10 years. I think it actually started before the financial crisis, kind of at the end of the Bush era. But the financial crisis, I think, certainly accelerated it. And there is just a kind of alienation, a disaffection, a radicalization on some level. And there's on the elite level, that hasn't entirely penetrated. You know, if you look at who Obama surrounded himself with, his economic team, a lot of them were alumni of the Clinton administration. Some of them, you know, came from Wall Street. Many of them were involved in sort of deregulating financial markets toward the end of the Clinton administration.
Right. In fact, one of the reasons that we're hearing Janet Yellen, our last segment, testify before the Senate today and her confirmation hearings to be the Federal Reserve Chair instead of Larry Summers is exactly this blowback from Democrats, right?
Correct. It is exactly that. You know, what's interesting, though, is that internal rift has largely been repressed while Obama has been president, you know, partly because when they came in, everyone recognized that the first order of business was to, you know, fix the financial crisis and get the economy back on track. No one wanted sort of intra-party, you know, ideological sniping. And partly it's, you know, you're just reluctant to criticize the president of your own party. But it has flared up at various moments over the past 5 years, and that Summers yelling back and forth, that kind of beauty contest between the two of them to see who would be the Fed chairman nominee, was clearly a case when it erupted. I mean, I think something like 20 Democrats signed a letter that officially said that they just preferred, you know, they supported Yellen to be the nominee. But it was a clear shot at Larry Summers. There was a line in that letter that all these Democrats signed that basically praised her independence of thought and of mind when it came to matters of deregulation. And it was just a clear, obvious shot at Larry Summers, who sort of famously took a regulator to task for suggesting that, the administration regulate the derivatives market back in the late 1990s. And, of course, the derivatives market remained unregulated and ultimately blew up AIG, among other large financial institutions.
So the next back and forth, or a next back and forth, might be between Elizabeth Warren Democrats and Hillary Clinton Democrats, you suggest. And to that point, let's take a caller, Julian Hastings. Hi, Julie, you're on WNYC.
Oh, thanks for taking my call, and thanks for the show. It's great.
Sure, thanks.
Yes, my point is that Elizabeth Warren represents, yes, she reflects the majority of Democrats, but my understanding is she reflects the majority opinion of Americans on the issues she emphasizes. The majority of Americans agree with her, which means that Elizabeth Warren is the middle-of-the-road candidate. She's the candidate of middle America. And, of course, that's not how she's framed by the media. They frame her as representing progressives, which she does, but she represents middle America if you look at the polls.
Julie, thank you. Noam, do you go that far?
I do, yeah. In a lot of levels, I think that's right. I mean, the pollster, Celinda Lake, a Democratic pollster, has been polling about American views on financial market regulation, you know, basically since the crisis. And if you look at, a few of her recent polls, the support for regulation is only increased in recent years, and it is bipartisan and ecumenical. On the specific question of should government do more to regulate Wall Street, that was some polling in the 70s, I think, in 2011. It's now over the 80s. So that clearly includes a lot of Republicans, a lot of independents. One of my favorite statistics that kind of gets at this is the South Dakota Senate race. There is a seat opening up there in 2014, early 2015. And this is a state that Mitt Romney carried by 18 points. The Republican nominee is going to be the former governor of the state, very prominent politician in South Dakota. The Democratic nominee is going to be a very obscure former aide to Tom Daschle. He is only trailing the Republican by 6 points, and he has made the mantra of his campaign the idea that government per se is not the problem. The problem is that government is taken over by powerful interests. When the same poll that showed him only down 6 points also showed South Dakotans agreeing with that message by a 66-32 margin, and this is, again, South Dakota that voted for Mitt Romney by 18 points. So I do think she's right. I do think this has powerful bipartisan appeal.
But then before you go, why haven't we seen moderate Democrats get primaried from the left in the last two elections the way we've seen the Tea Party pick off Republicans?
Yeah, a couple of reasons. I mean, Democrats are sort of notoriously disorganized when it comes to this. I think the right is just, you know, has been building infrastructure for this purpose for 30 years, which Democrats just lack. And the second thing is it's just much harder when your party controls the White House and controls government. I mean, there are all sorts of levers that the administration has, the White House has, to keep people out of primaries, to clear fields for incumbents. And just, you know, beyond that, kind of psychically, you tend to be kind of less amped up about taking on your own party when you're in power than when you're out of power.
So to that point, Elizabeth Warren is not going to run for president if Hillary Clinton is. Is she?
I think she could. I think that has been the sort of conventional wisdom. It's a widespread assumption. But if you know about Elizabeth Warren, time and again in her career, she's cared much more about her issues than she has about sort of conventional political calculation. I cite a number of data points, in her biography. But the most striking one to me is, and she writes about this in her book, The Two-Income Trap, she met with Hillary when Hillary was first lady in the late 90s to talk about a bankruptcy bill that would have made it much harder for consumers to declare bankruptcy. There's a very popular bill on Wall Street and among the banking industry. She persuaded Hillary that this was a bad bill, and Hillary in turn persuaded her husband, Bill Clinton, to veto this bill in 2000. You fast forward a year, Hillary was a senator. Hillary actually supported the bill when she was a senator. In her book, Elizabeth Warren is absolutely scathing, and she says basically that Hillary, by the time that she had become a senator, could not afford to stand on principle, and she basically, you know, took one for the team on Wall Street. She has a long riff about this in her book. It's very explicit, and she's not backed down for this. I mean, this even came up in her 2012 Senate race in Massachusetts during an interview, actually not unlike this one, and she did not back down. So Elizabeth Warren is someone who I just think cares more about her issues than about sort of positioning herself for the next office. I think if you were in the latter mold, you probably would sit this one out with Hillary as the overwhelming favorite. But if you're Elizabeth Warren and you see Hillary Clinton just not embracing your issues the way you think they should be embraced, yep, I think there's a chance she might do it.
All right. Interesting times, as reported by New Republic senior editor Noam Scheiber in a fascinating article. Noam, thanks a lot.
Thanks for having me.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And again, if it happens during our show this hour, we will carry live President Obama's expected announcement that he will change the rules through executive orders to allow insurance companies to continue to offer those policies that you had that don't meet the benefits requirements under the Affordable Care Act on the individual market. We'll see how much of Obamacare he is going to change. We expect that announcement in about 20 minutes. We will see. Also still to come, the life and times of Padma Desai and Nels Klein, guitarist for Wilco, on advancing music education. Stay with us.